Murray, your first expansion out of Cape Town wasn't to Joburg or to Durban, but it was to Redwood City in California. What drew you there, and what was the biggest difference setting up shop that side of the world compared to South Africa?
So we had the more density we can create in a city that speaks to our product, the better the value proposition gets. So let's say you sign up to be a work club member, and the more work clubs we build, the more experiences we add to the city, the better your experience gets, the bigger the community gets, the more value we can create for you.
Because Neighborgood has good at its heart, I think you attract good people. You attract like-minded people, people who want to collaborate, people who want to help each other, people who want to support each other's businesses. I mean, it's tough out there. Entrepreneurs are struggling, the money is drying up, the ideas are drying up. Before we start this podcast, I have one small favor to ask you. Can you please hit the subscribe button down below so that we can help more people every week? Thank you. Welcome to the Right Place podcast, where we learn with you how to build connections that matter, relationships that last, and businesses that thrive. My name is John Watson, and today I'm talking to Murray Clark. He's the co-founder and CEO of Neighborgood. Murray, great to chat to you today.
John, it is awesome to be here, and congratulations on all of the good work that you guys are doing. I'm excited to be on the podcast.
Cool. Thanks so much, Murray. Appreciate it. Now, Murray, you're dialing in from one of your latest projects, the church building. Tell us a little bit about the idea behind that and how's it going so far?
So I'm sitting in a church house, which is a nonprofit initiative that we've been working on. We as a Neighborhood, and it is owned by the Anglican Church. I think one thing that's always been important for us when trying to create buildings is to make sure that we're contextually appropriate. So when this opportunity came across our desk, we wanted to try and lean into that social impact narrative that Church House has to offer. It's positioned at the entrance to Company Gardens, which is an incredible position. It's the Company Gardens, and the walkway through it is almost the arterial vein through the city of Cape Town. And it sort of connects the city with gardens. And so what we are trying to do is bring a big vacant, there's two vacant buildings that the Anglican Church own next to the main church hall of about 2,000 to 3,000 squares. And we are trying to help them reposition. Instead of just creating another workspace, we wanted to build Cape Town's first free co-work space for nonprofits. So the whole ground floor hall, which is absolutely beautiful, will be completely free for 100 to 200 sort of nonprofits who live and work in Cape Town. What we looked at overall was that nonprofits have offices everywhere. And there's no real ecosystem, so to speak, where they can all connect with one another. And so as part of this specific project, we wanted to really create that space that different nonprofits from across Cape Town can work in a really cool environment, connect with one another, and then for people from across Cape Town to be able to come and visit social impact initiatives, nonprofit initiatives, and yeah, just experience the whole nonprofit space. We say that big cities across the world love to identify as the next cool big tech city, but often that nonprofit narrative gets lost. So our objective in all of this is to create sort of the nonprofit capital of the world, and for Cape Town to almost reach high in taking ownership of that title. And this is the first step in that process for us to do that.
No, my word, Murray, that's an amazing vision that you guys are working towards there. And now, since Neighborhood started, you've repurposed many buildings. You've grown the company to over $10 million in revenue since 2020. How do you balance the drive for commercial success with your passion for community revitalization?
I think they both go hand in hand. I think at the end of the day, people are looking for sustainability in their lives. And in all ways, in this post-COVID world, we are rethinking what it means to live a sustainable life. And our product and the way in which we run our business is really just a reflection of the collective aspirations of every human on earth at the moment. You know, we all want a better life, and we're not necessarily looking at better as just being a monetary objective only. Yes, that is an objective in everyone's lives, meeting the needs of our family, et cetera, but there's also so much more to the quality of life that's important. Connecting with people, friendships, wellness, all of these things are important. So I think for us, from a timing perspective, building neighborhoods, and really our mission is to bring good to neighborhoods. We have about 1,000 living and working spaces across the city, wrapped up in an all-access, all-city passport, so that when you live and work with us at any of our buildings, you have access to all of them, not just one specific building, and a community of about 4,000 or 5,000 people, and a really cool app that connects it all, and you can connect with other neighbors. And so if you're a Dutch girl who's visiting Cape Town for a few months and you're 30 years old and you might be traveling alone, you don't have to just jump on an Airbnb and hope that you meet people. The neighborhood community is a really strong one. And you can literally, through accessing our platform and staying in any of our spaces, meet so many cool people just like you and I. So we're just creating a platform for community. And I think, as I said, the world is looking for that anyway. So I don't think there could be a better time in 2024 to be building the sort of product that Neighborhood has to offer. And I think people from across the world can appreciate that.
Oh, that's really special, Murray. I really like that you're diving into a connected community where communities can work together, collaborate together, meet up at a communal spot. Now, how do you work with the city in terms of ensuring that the buildings that you take over, that you respect the local community's history or their traditions? Because, you're not just flattening buildings. You incorporate in neighborhood principle into established structures already.
So 100% of the buildings that we have taken over and the projects that we've launched are what we term adaptive reuse projects. So they are projects where an office building or an old hotel hasn't necessarily worked. There's now a requirement to repurpose its use from offices to a co-work space, or from a hotel to a co-living space, or from one function to another function. And so in most cases, the requirement is already there, as in the need to transform the space makes logical sense in the world that we live in. Our first adaptive reuse project was at the beginning of COVID, where we took an old hotel and we converted it to a co-living space. Obviously, at the beginning of COVID, there were no short-term rentals, but there was still a demand for long-term rentals, and there was certainly a demand for community in that time. So by and large, the cities are very supportive. I think at the end of the day, cities need beacons of light to thrive within the city. And the more interaction there is, and the more people and the more density that cities have, the better the cities do. So I think our mission and our vision is aligned with Cape Town as a city, and the way in which we operate. We try and be as collaborative as possible. From a professional team perspective, we engage very early with the city. We are lucky to live in a city that's run by great people who answer the phone when you phone them. It's easy to engage with the city of Cape Town relative to some of the other cities across the country. And you get feedback pretty quickly, whether it might be a rezoning application or whether it might be a town planning approval. They're constantly looking at ways to try and improve their process. A lot of that has been driven by leadership, and Mayor Jordan, and then the Deputy Mayor, Eddie Andrews, who leads the town planning side of things. So these are forward-thinking people who, like us, have the city's best interest at heart. And so far, touch wood, it's been a really great journey working with them to try and bring our project to life. And hopefully we're going to be doing a lot more with them over the next 10 years.
No, that's really good to hear, Murray. And I agree with you 100%. We've had the mayor a few times at the Clara Business Network, and he often reiterates that we need to make doing business in Cape Town much easier. Whatever red tape they can eliminate, whatever processes they can speed up, whatever paperwork they can sort out faster, just adds to doing business in Cape Town easier. It attracts more investment. It attracts more people to come and work here, live here, experience it. So I think you're doing really well there. And this is maybe a great advert for doing business in Cape Town.
Completely, yeah. No, I wouldn't. In South Africa, it's certainly by far, I would say, the easiest place to do business. So they're achieving that objective for sure.
No, excellent, Murray. Now, talking about Cape Town, so it's an amazing city to explore. And I've seen you've recently launched the Neighborgood app. How does this app fit into your wider ecosystem?
So technology plays a big role in our business and in any business in the world that we live in. I think when we go to our mission to bring good to neighborhoods and to connect people across the city, that's really what we're trying to do, whether it's online or in person. So the foundation of the app has really been created to connect neighbors across the city, to share really cool local restaurants, for people to be able to book our living spaces and our working spaces, for people to be able to learn from other local people rather than just Googling something, top 10 restaurants in Cape Town, like really authentic, locally recommended restaurants, cafes, experiences embedded into the fabric of the app. We bought a little company in an M&A called Local Knowledge that had developed the foundation of the app over about a 7-year period. The guys are incredibly entrepreneurial, and from a culture perspective, there was a match. So over time, over the last year and a half, we have iterated its initial offering into what Neighborgood is now. It is still a work in progress, but we're certainly getting there. Within the app, there are special interest channels, so soon you'll be able to jump in. If you like Paddle as an example, you'll be able to connect with other people in the city that like Paddle. If you like hiking, you can jump into that channel. If you like running, you can join a running group, and it will be moderated by heroes across the city who drive their objectives, whether it be hiking, wellness, entrepreneurship. So almost in a way, a little bit like Reddit, but more at the city level, which is really interesting for us. And then you'll be able to connect with people, send messages, and all of those good things when you're at our spaces. It's a place for you to see what events and activations are happening across the city. And we think that the potential is significant. And as we move into new cities, so we will replicate the infrastructure that we're building and the content that lives on app in the cities that we live in. So you'll be able to then choose Cape Town, San Fran, New York, Miami, Melbourne, Australia, London, wherever it might be, and you'll be able to really see this product as a city app. So when you visit those cities, whether you want to live with us, work with us for a day or for a few months, or just attend our events, or just meet with really cool people across the city, that will be your place to do it.
No, I think that's amazing. I mean, you've already got the space for people to connect, and now you've got the app to help people connect even further. So if I'm joining Neighborgood, I've got an app, and I can see, especially if I'm new to the city, I can see, hey, these people are hiking, or these people want to play paddle, or, yeah, or this is a rest. And then it's all part of that ecosystem already.
Yeah, it really is designed to create a social experience and to create that place for people to connect, to build community at the end of the day. And so whether it's a physical building or whether it's our app, they both have the same objectives. And yeah, it's a work in progress. Technology is difficult to build. And we are making small improvements every day. And I'm hoping by the end of October, we would have had a lot more progress there.
Excellent, Murray. Now, Murray, you've been doing this a couple of years. Have you got a favorite story of people or companies connecting at a Neighborgood location and then going on to do amazing things together?
You know, we had such a cool relationship with friends of ours who work with us in collaboration now, who were tenants of ours called Ollie, and it's a Dutch organization that now lives and breathes Cape Town. Isa leads that. She's a personal friend of mine, and she's just an incredible human. And we have four of the interns working with us almost permanently now. And so that is one group of people who I think really has, shone above the rest. There are so many great organizations and collaborative people that we've worked with over the last 4.5 years, but they're definitely one to mention. We've become friends with so many of our tenants along the way. The Grumpy and Run girls who run a vegan donut shop are just amazing human beings. I could mention 10 to 20 different tenants who worked with us along the way, and just friends that we've made from across the world, members who've stayed with us for a few days up to a few months. They stay on our WhatsApp groups. They interact with the brand all of the time. When they come back to Cape Town, they visit our buildings. They connect with our community. So it's one of those things where once you're a member for life, and we want you to stay connected to the community, and we want to create a value for you as much as we can. Those are two or three really good stories that for me are something I can remember.
Excellent, Murray. I think because Neighborhood has good at its heart, I think you attract good people. You attract like-minded people, people who want to collaborate, people who want to help each other, people want to support each other's businesses. I mean, it's tough out there. Entrepreneurs are struggling. The money is drying up. The ideas are drying up. So if there's a space where you can support each other, connect, I mean, you're just one conversation away from turning your fortunes around.
Yeah. Our work clubs are great places for that to happen. We developed our version of a slow lounge, so to speak, with $1,000 a month. And you have access to any of our workspaces across the city. And there's just so many cool people who work in the spaces. It's a great place to network. It's a great place to do sort of deep focused work. They are also community centric. We have entrepreneurial events that happen. We have a dedicated WhatsApp group. We have a place on our, for that as well. And as far as like networking is concerned professionally, that's been a really great initiative for us. And I think as we expand into new cities, hopefully we can create those network effects across oceans as well into new continents.
No, awesome, Murray. Awesome. It's awesome to see it happening in real life there. Now, Murray, your first expansion out of Cape Town wasn't to Joburg or to Durban, but it was to Redwood City in California. What drew you there, and what was the biggest difference setting up shop that side of the world compared to South Africa?
So we had some really good partners in Young Lewin, who are property developers themselves, who develop both student residential and co-living units. We built a relationship with them over about 1.5 years, and the opportunity came about to manage their whole portfolio. And so we obviously wanted to take it with both arms. Redwood is about 20 minutes from San Fran, a city that we want to be in. So we felt like it was a really good place for us to build our efficiency in a new market in a fairly soft entry, so to speak. It's only about 100 units in total, so we're able to manage a really cool community of people who work for Oracle, Facebook, a whole bunch of other companies in Redwood City. Culturally, there are differences to the area, and that's something that we've had to learn. Redwood City and Cape Town obviously have a different demographic. There's a heck of a lot of young professionals who work incredibly hard in both cities. But like any city, there are small nuances that make them unique. So for us, we moved over one of our best asset managers, a guy who's leading operations there, Van Azieman, who's also a phenomenal human being, who is leading the team over there. We built a small team in San Francisco, who will then expand as we take on new properties. We've got a whole bunch of new properties that are coming on stream in San Francisco. San Fran is similar to Cape Town in context, especially in certain areas. So lots of great restaurants, lots of cool cafes. It has its own social issues as well, just like any city in South Africa. But by and large, it's a beautiful city and a really great candidate for us to build that all city model, which is our intention there as well, is to focus on bringing density to the city of San Francisco in some great areas, and then hopefully soon in Brooklyn, New York as well.
Okay, excellent, Murray. No, that's amazing that you can take the concept from Cape Town and replicate it in another market. But again, like I said earlier, the ethos is about connecting good people, making good spaces.
Correct, yeah.
To connect. And I mean, you can replicate that in any city in the world.
Well, everyone wants the same thing in life, right? It doesn't matter where you're living. So we're all, again, like thinking about wellness, we're thinking about all of these important things in the way we live. And whether you're in Cape Town, whether you're in San Fran, whether you're in Timbuktu, we're all searching for the same thing. People, community, love, all these points that we're talking about. And that's really the basis and the foundation of our whole business. Yes, we are obviously selling rooms and apartments and workspaces, but the fundamentals and the values that are the foundation of our company are really what I believe makes us very different, outside of the fact that we've built a connected city model, which we haven't seen anywhere else in the world just yet. And that thinks about product within the context of an entire city rather than just a single building, which is traditionally the way landlords would think. And so that's the exciting part for us, is being able to take a homegrown South African concept that we've built in Cape Town, where we've seen it come to life and work incredibly well, and then create a contextually appropriate solution for a different city using the same methodology, a similar product. So that's what's exciting for us, is going into new markets across the states. The US is an unbelievable opportunity overall. Every state has tremendous potential. So you don't necessarily need to be present in all 40 or 50 states to be successful. You just really need to be successful in one or two, and you can build a business, 10 times the size of anything we can build in South Africa just by virtue of the economy. So that's obviously a driving factor for us as well.
No, that's really good. That's really good to hear there, Murray. And you've been working closely with Shane Young and Dan Lewin, like you said, from Young Lewin Advisors.
Yes, yeah.
What are some of the biggest lessons you've learned from them?
I mean, Dan and Shane are incredible young entrepreneurs. These guys are in their mid-30s who have a love for real estate. They are efficient in the way they design their units. They are both brokers and investors themselves, so they have their nose close to the ground all the time. They are good people. We've met their families. They've visited South Africa. We've obviously spent a heck of a lot of time there as well. And so, I mean, they're going to go on and do incredible things in their own career. They have a big student residential portfolio in Long Beach. So they're going to continue growing that. And I think both of them are incredible young men who are going to do exceptional things in the property space. So, yeah, culturally, as entrepreneurs, we are very similar. We see opportunities. And we execute. I think that there's a common denominator amongst most entrepreneurs, that you have a nose for a deal and a nose for an opportunity, and these guys are no different. And they're just good people to work with. So it's been a really cool journey for us thus far.
No, that's awesome, man. I wish you all the best with the US expansion, and looking Thanks. Forward to see what you're going to do in Brooklyn, New York.
Thank you. We're excited about Brooklyn. There's some really cool suburbs that offer tremendous opportunity, like Bushwick. Again, so many cool little cafes and street corners and walkable parks. And so the canvas is amazing. Obviously, New York is one of the most competitive real estate markets in the world. But we back ourselves to do well. And so I'm sure that's what we're going to do.
Awesome, Murray. Awesome, man. Now, Murray, recently on LinkedIn, you said that the next Amazon or Airbnb will come from housing. What did you mean by this, and what shifts are there in the housing market that you've
seen? So let's look at housing versus hotels and unit numbers. I think I said it on the post. Hotel room, 18.4 million in the world, represented by huge brands like Hyatt, Hilton, Marriott, Accor. You know, the South African counterparts would be Southern Sun, Sorgo, all these big hotel brands. But no brands at all in housing. So people don't see housing or rental units as a consumer product, but they see hotels as a consumer product. So my belief is that, and yet housing offers, as I said in that post, 2.4 billion units relative to 18 million. That's not 100% more. That's like 3,000% more, whatever the max is. Mm. So the opportunity firstly is to recognize it as a category in the consumer space. So is there an opportunity to build a brand that speaks to the modern day renter, short or long term? If you are moving to Cape Town, as an example, with your family, the first place you're going to look at is probably Property 24. But now what if there was a really cool brand that could solve that problem for you? Like fully furnished product. You only need something for 6 months to it's a stepping stone. You can rent it in a flexible manner. You can start on any day of the month and end on any day of the month. It comes with access to workspace across the city. It comes with access to pre-event and activation. It comes with access to health and wellness. It's got all these bells and whistles that the traditional property companies don't offer. All you're going to get from a landlord right now is a key to your apartment and an invoice once a month. So if we can move it from a functional, fairly tired, traditional category into a branded residence category that offers so much more than just an invoice and a key at the beginning of your rental period, the potential to move the needle is significant, simply because I think it's completely underserviced. Mm-hmm. So I don't even think anyone's looking at housing as a category to disrupt at a global level, and that's the opportunity. Is to create a global brand that can disrupt rental housing across the world, and disrupt living and working in the way we live and work and experience life in cities across the world. I don't quite have the answer just yet, but we're working on it.
No, awesome. I think this is quite a cool concept, because if you think about it, if I rent a place, I just get my box that I'm going to live in. But if you're going to come with a solution, you're going to solve my housing problem, my work problem, my collab problem, my connection problem, and you accelerate my comfortability in the space.
Yeah.
That's something that's painful, because you've ticked all these boxes for me. It's not just I need a place to stay. It's like I need a place to stay, to work, to gym, to connect with, to eat,
everything.
To do my everything. You've got everything in one.
Yeah, it's just your key to the city, so to speak. So it's your passport to the city and a network of really good people who are all chasing the same dreams as you and I.
No, excellent, Murray. That's excellent. Now, how is Neighborgood positioned in itself to be part of that future?
So we're building a density product. Again, we have an offer and a propco. So we manage buildings for and off on behalf of property owners for a fee, depending on the nature of the deal. We lease buildings, depending on the nature of the deal. We buy buildings, again, depending on the nature of the deal. We don't mind doing either or. In fact, we like a split. The deal economics are the driving force behind whether we do one or the other. So obviously, property is a capital intensive game. So we think OpCo will probably grow faster than PropCo. But in every city, we have an OpCo and a PropCo. And OpCo always plays a role in PropCo one way or another. It is the branded part of the product. So whether it's a living space or a working space, we're very brand centric. We're very consumer centric. So we think like a hotel company and we operate like a hotel company, but we are moving the product closer to homes. And so you can stay with us for a short time, or you can stay with us for a long time. We want to offer both. And so the more density we can create in a city that speaks to our product, the better the value proposition gets. So let's say you sign up to be a Work Club member. The more Work Clubs we build, the more experiences we add to the city, the better your experience gets, the bigger the community gets, the more value we can create for you. Versus, let's say you just sign up with a normal workspace. They might have one location, but you're not going to get the value of working across multiple if that's an objective. So that's a big thing for us. On the living front, again, you've got free access to all of our workspaces, all of our experiences across the city. And we've been quite intentional about keeping the area that we had NeighborGrid living and workspace units and experiences in quite a small pocket. So we want the journey, the customer journey to be fairly intimate. We don't want to build 50 buildings in Cape Town and have one outlier in wherever it might be. It doesn't make sense. Like, there needs to be a logical user journey across the city. And that's really important for us. And so achieving density creates efficiency as well. So you can use really strong management teams across multiple sites, and hopefully you can then share that cost as well. And everything is close together, so you get to kick the tires of the building that you own and manage. It just brings a lot of like local market knowledge as well. We know all the best property brokers in the city. We know most of the big landlords, and we just know what's happening on every street corner. The same goes to say when we move into San Fran, it will be run by a really strong leadership team, Vanna, and we will build the same product again, whether we're in San Fran, New York, Melbourne. Everything really needs to be driven by strong leadership teams first, and then replicating the same density model. So lots of buildings, living workspace and experiences in one small area, so that there's like benefit to that overall in any city we get to. And then we'll partner as well. So we're going to partner with big property who have problems to solve. The easiest way for us to get to scale is to partner with the biggest property owners in every city. So we will pick sort of the top 5 to 10 in every city and reverse the product into their buildings.
No, that's excellent, Mo. No, I wish you all the best for that. I think it's a really cool concept, especially the concept of the density. I like that because you give people options and you give people a sense that this isn't a one and done thing. I'm not on my own island here. I might have a place where I prefer to eat and sleep, and I might have a place where I prefer big meetings, small meetings, one-on-one.
Completely.
Yeah. No, excellent. Now, Marie, you've had a couple of different business ventures over the years, and you shared openly that some of them were successful, some of them not so successful. What has failure taught you about resilience and adaptability in business?
Oh, goodness me. Failure is just part of life, eh? It is a normal part of becoming successful, I guess. And we all need to just accept that it happens. It happens a lot in the beginning and hopefully less over time. But it will probably happen forever. Doesn't always have to happen at the company level. It can happen, in processes. And, you know, if you look at how we run our company, we're always trying new things to make things better. And some of those new things aren't always successful. I mean, that's the same as the businesses we've run in the past. But you have to have the courage to even make the decision to implement a process or run a business, for it to even have a chance of succeeding. Right. So I think first and foremost, just having that courage and that confidence in yourself to be able to, take the step into entrepreneurship and start your business, or, it's just something that really speaks to who I am and who I have become more than who I was. And I've learned a lot over my 15 to 20 years in business. And you just really have to have a proper backbone that you can lean into, knowing that even when things are tough, and even when people are saying that your business might not succeed, that if you follow through, it either will succeed or it will fail, and you will learn from that. So there's no real downside to that at the end of the day, because all of the learnings I had from past failures, I've been able to take and apply to Neighborgood, which has now been, you know, really successful as far as the business is concerned. And I wouldn't have been able to do that had I not had the failures before or the learnings before, because I don't really regard them as failures. I think that I have been lucky to have an 80-20 strike rate in my businesses. So probably weighted 20% towards failing and 80% towards winning. Most of that 80% has been in successful property developments. So in terms of building a balance sheet, that's been where most of my successes have come from. But we've also had failures there as well. And you just have to be prepared to throw the dice and take a calculated risk, because that's where, obviously, it's all, you live and die in the detail, but in the end of the day, you can make a decision. And yeah, it's a privilege to be able to even get up every day and run the business that we're running and work with the people that we do. And we're not all, had the three founders not had, the courage to start the company after what was quite a difficult failure for me personally, when we started Neighborgood. It was a little company called Good that evolved into Neighborgood. It was a one location that didn't work. But it hurt us. And we really had to like deconstruct that model and put it back together and really do a post-mortem on why it didn't work, rebuild a team from scratch, relook at simplifying processes, focusing on core, which for us has become living, uncomplicating the model and just putting it back together in a way that works a heck of a lot better. And even today we continue to learn. We do that by, you know, putting our best foot forward every day and working with people who are smarter than us. Yeah. And so that's something that I've been quite intentional about, is finding really smart people who I can lean on for across the company, whether it be finance, whether it be ops, whether it be sales, whether it be culture, anything. All of these people are extremely proficient and way more intelligent than I am in their field of expertise. So when you can put the sum of the parts together, life gets a lot easier. And hopefully your successes start outweighing your failures at the end of the day.
No, that's a wonderful testament to the fact that if you're going to disregard the failures and ignore the lessons, I mean, you're just going to repeat yourself. You're going to repeat the same mistakes again. But if you're going to just stop, think, process it, let's reflect on this, and do a deep dive, then you can build on that. It just becomes part of your foundation, part of your journey towards success. Yeah.
I think a big challenge for entrepreneurs naturally is that we are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. So we often see the world through a fairly optimistic lens, depending on the nature of the entrepreneur. I would say like the best entrepreneurs are generally optimistic people. And that can color things when you see an opportunity or you think that there's an opportunity, but for whatever reason there might actually not be an opportunity. Often an entrepreneur's conviction is so resounding that it takes a heck of a lot to bring them down to earth if the product is wrong. So let's say there's a product market fit, which let's say you can't find product market fit in a particular thing, because entrepreneurs are so optimistic, often they'll push it for too long and at their own cost, rather than sort of decluttering their mind and saying, okay, that's not the right way. That's because obviously as entrepreneurs, we have a heck of a lot of pride and we think everything we do is going to work. Otherwise we wouldn't start them in the first place. Right. So I think I've also sort of got to learn, how to distinguish conviction about a product or a business and common sense, because you really need a combination of both to be successful.
But that's a very, very special answer that you've given there, Murray. Now, Murray, what advice would you give to someone who isn't maybe as brave as you yet, someone who's maybe feels stuck in their career, they don't love it at all. They've got some ideas, but they're afraid to leave that security behind and take the leap like you did and do something like Neighbor Good.
Yeah. It depends if you've got a family or not. If you've got a family, you really need to dot your I's and cross your T's, because your objective shift when you start bringing up kids and you've got mouths to feed. So I would say that sometimes making the decision to stay in employment is as courageous as taking the decision to take the leap in business, because it sets your objectives on what's most important in life, right? Family and the people around you. Again, having the courage, if you are in that category, if you are able to incrementally create something as a side hustle, that then creates success and you can be in the most risk adjusted manner possible, logical in the way that you execute that to replace your income, or you can raise money from investors, preferably not friends and family, but often it is in the beginning. So that you can step out of your current role into an entrepreneurial role where you can at the very least match your income or match your basic earning requirements to live in a home. And food at the end of the day, it might not be the highest standard, but as long as you can put food on the table at the end of the day, that's most important. I think life experience is real, and not all of us are necessarily meant to be entrepreneurs. I think it's like, you know, amazing basketball players. If I had to try and play basketball, I just wouldn't necessarily be as good. I'm not genetically coded or hardwired to be a basketball player or a swimmer for that matter. And there's different schools of thought here. People think that entrepreneurship is something that can be learned, which I agree with. But I also think some people are just naturally hardwired to run businesses. And if you are hardwired like that, it's much easier because you are more comfortable with risk. You are generally someone who has a propensity to start businesses. But then there's also that second category of person who has an entrepreneurial itch and they want to try things. My advice is to do it in the most risk adjusted way possible, not to necessarily jump in head first. In the past, I would have said jump in head first and go for it. But now I have a 2-year-old son at home and it's slightly different. And I think with, you know, with logic and reason, maybe it's age and wisdom. But I would definitely put in the hours and try to set something up on the side. And when it's successful, then move into being able to make a decision to run full time on an idea. Because, yeah, the last thing you want to do is sacrifice your earnings on a monthly basis on an idea that may or may not come to fruition. I'd rather see it come to fruition first and then move across to that, or hire people while you're still working to get it going to a point where you even have the luxury to move across full time. Because as I said, you can expect some failures before it becomes successful. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but in my experience, it always does. And there's definitely version 1 to 10 that you have to naturally go through for it to eventually be successful, whatever that might be, whether it's a product or service. So yeah, my late 30s self tells me to be more risk adjusted in the way we all think about entrepreneurship. Again, with sustainability in mind, entrepreneurship has become obviously quite a cool word and it's something that we all aspire to. But at the same time, it's super important to, you know, look after family and take care of people around you. It's more important to me than just fetching an ultra, if that makes sense. But
no, absolutely.
You also need to, you only live one life and you have to have no regrets, and make sure that any life that you live is taken with courage and is lived with courage. So just understanding that we only really have that one life to live is also a driving factor. It's like this push-pull thing, mate. I wish I had the exact answer, but I don't.
No, excellent, Murray. No, I think it's a very fair answer you've given there, because everyone's got their own situation and you have to weigh up the pros and the cons. You have to weigh up the necessities. You have to weigh up your responsibilities at home versus like the dreams that you have. But I do often believe that a lot of people, they just don't back themselves enough. And when they do eventually want to back themselves, it's too late, or time has moved on, or they're in a different phase of their life. And so you got to look at where you are, and maybe it's just a question of coming to neighbor good, connecting with some right people, and collaborate.
Yeah, for sure.
You don't necessarily have to do your dream idea by yourself. You can find partners from the get go, and that you can partner with.
I think co-founders are a necessity in life.
No, excellent, Murray. Murray, we've reached pretty much the end of our chat today, and we always end off by asking our guests the same question. Murray, here in 2024, are you in the right place?
I'm in a good place, excuse the pun, a very good place, and hopefully we'll be in many more places soon, San Fran, New York, Melbourne, London, and a few other good places. So, yes, we're in the right place at the right time. Hopefully, we'll be in many more places soon.
Excellent, Murray. No, I wish you all the best. This has been such an amazing chat, getting to know you a little bit better and your insights on neighborhood as well. I've been following you for a while on LinkedIn, like I said a bit earlier. And what I just love about the neighborhood brand is that really good is at the heart of everything. Murray, what is the best place for people to learn more about neighborhood and your services and what you have to offer?
So social Instagram, neighborgood_SA. LinkedIn as well. Murray James Clark, and then on our website, neighborgood.co.za.
Excellent, Murray. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Murray Clark from Neighborgood. Please follow him on LinkedIn. Please check out their website and their social media. And we will see you next time at the right place.
Thanks, John. Cheers.
Cheers.